Welcome to A Look In. We are a podcast for young people, and today you are joined by me, Anna.
And me, Laura.
And me, Alice.
We've come together today to just have a chat about things that are happening in the world around us, from the ridiculous to the profound. Actually, today, that is very accurate. And we want to invite you to take a look into the things that are happening around us as we explore how Jesus makes a difference in these issues and how we make sense of them in light of our faith in Jesus. So today we're going to talk about Taylor Swift and her breakup. And then we're going to think about fear and security. And then Laura has been baiting us with this hilarious story that she has waited to tell us live on the pod.
Yeah, we'll come to that. We'll keep the expectations low for now. But yes.
And think about an interesting question from that. So packed day today.
Packed it.
We want to start by talking about Taylor Swift and obviously Joe Alwyn. They broke up, long-term boyfriend a while ago. But then her and Maddie Healy, they dated quickly. I want to say like a month. Really fast dating time. And they recently broke up. And they said to the media, we're both extremely busy and realize we're not really compatible with each other, which I think is good to realize quickly, I guess, for them.
So many people can relate to that. I just feel like that's a lot of breakups. So yeah. It's just a shame when you have to report to the international media about it.
Yeah. Poor them. Yeah. That's so hard being rich and famous. And
busy.
Taylor's friends said they just want what's best for her, but they're also not really shocked that the relationship fizzled out since she recently got out of a long-term relationship. Mm. So I wanted to chat to you guys about breakups in general and how you feel about them.
How we feel about breakups.
Very open question.
Look, not good. Breakups feel that nice.
Alice just got married. She's not into breakups at all.
I think that, I mean, as you said, Laura, this is hard for Taylor to have to do it publicly because yeah. I do think it's a very vulnerable thing. The first thing that comes to my mind is I remember when I was in high school, one of my friends and her boyfriend broke up. It was all very sad. And we were all my friendship group kind of like sitting on the stairs in the courtyard and a teacher came over and we were like, what should we do? This has just happened. And she was like, don't say anything bad about the boyfriend because they will get back together. And we were like, you do not understand this situation.
Wow.
Anyway, they did. They got back together.
What a weird insight from a teacher.
Weird, I know. Anyway.
So teachers know what's what.
No. So, guys, don't say anything bad about Maddie Healy, okay?
There has been a lot of bad stuff said about him, that's for sure. People are not taking that teacher's advice.
No. And I feel like even when they were dating, all our stans were like, no.
This is bad. Yeah, that's right. People have been against it from early on, I would say.
I think he's a bit controversial.
Yeah, that's probably a whole other ep in itself, his rap sheet. But I feel like breakups are hard because they not always but most of the time involve a lot of pain but also have a bit of like, yeah, vulnerability and even maybe shame sometimes connected to them. Mm. So they feel very fraught and sensitive but, mm-hmm. You know, lots of people go through that experience and so it is sort of important to be able to know how to be a good friend to someone in that moment or, you know, if it comes your way too.
Because it does feel like a kind of grief, like you're losing a kind of relationship but also an imagined future and all the things that come along with that. And I think that generally when you're dating someone, there's a shift in some of your friendships for good and bad. So then it's like recalibrating how all your relationships fit in your life. So that's a hard thing.
Both of you are so like empathetic and probably because
you. All right, lay it on us. Where's this going?
Depends on the boyfriend.
So many people go through breakups. I just think it feels like such a trivial thing. Like if you like broke up with someone and then told your boss the next day, I need to take a few days off because I broke up with my boyfriend. I would feel the shame associated with that. I'm just like, that's not a legitimate excuse to like feel the pain that obviously from all of our experiences that's like goes with a breakup.
So is your question, are they that bad?
good question. I do want to hear about the kind of like pros and cons of a breakup. Just because Zoe Foster Blake has written a book called
Breakup Boss.
Thanks, Al.
Yeah. A while ago, yeah.
And she talks about like obviously tragic, but also sometimes good.
Mm. I think that's true of lots of hard things in life, though, as well, that there's a chance to try and write the narrative around it to find good, even though it's really bad. Certainly from a Christian perspective, I think like the hope that God's involved and God cares gives you like a grounds for hope that something good can come out of it. But I reckon when you're in the moment, it is hard to like have a sort of laser sharp vision on that.
It's more a hindsight thing.
Yeah, it can be a hindsight thing. Or if you're like sitting alongside someone who's the one who's going through that experience firsthand for themselves, maybe you have a different vantage point and you can see some good things or some opportunities. But in the moment, that's hard.
Totally. I remember reading something somewhere that God's grace is not hypothetical. This idea that when you think about your future and you imagine the worst thing that could possibly happen, it will never be as bad as that, because when you actually go through something, it gives you an opportunity to actually understand the depth of God's love for you.
So tell me more about that. I don't get it.
I feel like, there's an idea that I suppose we're self-sufficient in our normal life. We just, you know, we float along doing our own thing. But when hard things happen and we actually have to come to terms with this is not what I wanted, or I feel out of control, or I just am really in touch with my weakness here, suddenly you feel the need for something bigger. And I think that trusting in God, knowing that, God sends Jesus, God with us, I suppose gives us an experience of his love when we can see that we, are dependent creatures.
Wow.
I think thinking about breakups and how that, like, that really feels like there's a lot of connections in that category there, like feeling out of control. I suppose especially if you're the one who's been broken up with, that's like a heightened sense of lack of control. Or, something's been taken away from you that is exposing about, how you depend on other people. And I think we are created to be people who are really significantly shaped by the relationships that we're in. We're not meant to just like rise above and be like, I don't need anybody. But we're relational creatures, and that's a really beautiful part of who we are. But it's humbling because it doesn't necessarily mean that it all goes to plan or that you can control it. And that's true even within relationships that last a long time. There can be really hard patches or things where like, this is not quite equal in this season or whatever it might be. Like just the having the status of the relationship existing is not a guarantee that you have control over things, or you feel kind of independent or, protected against heartache or things like that too. Yeah.
I heard about this concept called the Heartbreak Hotel, which is not just for like breakup kind of moments, but any kind of significant grief people experience in their lives. And they can book in to this hotel, and the facilities are created around them in a way that they feel cared for, loved. They can take time out from their normal life. They promote like exercise and counseling and good kind of things to help you process it, but also time to kind of remove yourself from the grief. As someone who has a faith in Jesus, how do you kind of process heartbreak? Do you feel like you need a heartbreak hotel? Do you feel like you have other means?
I feel like a lot of the things about that sound really good and sort of tap into who God's made us to be, which is that, the love of other people, the support that's helpful, like caring for yourself in as like an embodied creature, not just only thinking about I've got to think a certain way, I've got to force myself to feel a certain way, but to be like, you need space to grieve, whether that's kind of like crying, thinking, maybe like anger's connected to it as well, being able to like deal with your anger, not to be alone. also just to like make sure your body's getting what it needs to be able to like face the day, all that sort of stuff. I feel like that's really good. And then there's also just like even more profoundly deeper things, because I think the disruption in relationships, because relationships are so important to us, raise the big questions like, who am I? How do other people see me? What am I like worth in relationships? And I think other people are really significant in helping us along the road of that and to find kind of anchoring there, but nothing can provide quite as profound a security and assurance as God, who is bigger than all people and you know, endures eternally and is steadfast and didn't love me in the first place when I was at my best and most lovable and attractive and appealing. And so that, I think, is the very most anchoring thing. That's as deep as it gets.
That reminds me of this concept of rest. Like, as you say, there's so many good things about taking time out, being cared for, being seen, feeling like you are valuable, and all those physical things that help get you there. But that this concept of rest is always going to be bigger than that. Like, I think we've talked about that on the podcast before. But that Jesus offers like a more lasting and true kind of rest and being known in that as kind of true hope for healing after heartbreak and even in the midst of heartbreak.
There's a psalm that I remember when I was going through a breakup, a friend read to me, and I've never felt so like seen, so like, and now I look back a little bit giggly being like, oh my gosh, I was so dramatic. but
it's really in the moment.
Yeah, it's totally the counts, moment.
Yeah.
And it's in Psalm 6. It says, all night long I flood my bed with tears and drench my couch with weeping, and my eyes grow weak with sorrow and they fail because of all my foes. And then later on, and then later on it says, but the Lord has heard my weeping and the Lord has heard my cry for mercy and the Lord accepts my prayer. That I think just like in that like overly emotional.
That
heightened.
Does sound dramatic. Yeah.
I wanted to preface that. but just knowing like God sees you in that moment. He's like, he sees you, he hears your prayer, but also the kind of concept of like he offers healing, I think, was just such a hopeful thing. And I know so many people who have become Christians after they've experienced heartbreak or in lots of different contexts and have experienced that real healing from a relationship with Jesus where they feel secure and loved no matter what their next kind of reality looks like. That it's nice.
Well, that feels like a beautiful place to leave it and head on to our next conversation topic for tonight. So I saw this article on the ABC today and the headline read, private security guard numbers are increasing. What's behind the trend? And they said that there is just this all-time high in Australia of private security being hired for places like in the community, like schools and libraries, and that even though the crime rate across Australia isn't going up, it might be spiking in different areas, there does seem to be this desire to increase security. And I wondered whether you can resonate with that at all or that surprises you. To hear.
Well, what actually first comes to mind is I'm part of a Facebook group for my local suburb.
Yeah.
A suburb in the
inner security guards
in the inner west of Sydney. And it's just interesting watching the dialogue because there's lots of people. It's a suburb that lots of people move in and out of all the time. It's got some sort of like transient population and people will join and they'll be like, is this a safe suburb? And it's interesting people's conversation about that. There's a lot of like suburb pride of like, it's awesome. Don't believe the lies, you know, don't slander us and say that it's not safe. And others who are like, no, like these types of like, there's been lots of reporting of bikes being stolen recently. And they're like, yeah, classic crime for the neighborhood kind of thing. And so it's just interesting kind of bringing it like close to home and how people process on that a lot. And it's a community Facebook group and there's so much that could be talked about, but like safety is a really big recurring theme on there. And so maybe I've only been in it for like 8 months, I think. About 8 months ago I joined it. I don't know if it's a long-standing thing, but it does feel like a pressing issue in, like, my literal suburb neighborhood. Yeah.
On the flip side of that, I used to be part of a different local community Facebook group that I am no longer in, but a guy had a camera, a security camera at the front of his house, but because he always would post on this Facebook page with footage, people from the group or who were aware of him just trolled him and would purposely prank him and his house for the security camera footage. And it was hilarious.
It's a good use of your spare time, yeah.
at his expense. But he just was not into jokes, this guy. Like, really didn't take it.
I'm getting that vibe,
like,
yeah.
Oh, poor guy.
Yes, it does feel like maybe for him there was a deeper kind of fear happening there. The article talked about two reasons that they thought could be for this trend could be happening. One was the politicization of fear, that there's a lot in the media about reasons to be afraid, and I think we can resonate with that, with the cost of living crisis and just generally things that are induce fear, get clicks. And the other thing was people maybe being a bit less able or robust to deal with risk at this moment. They're just their theories. I wonder what you think about that, whether you've seen people increasingly sensitive to fears and risks.
Well, that was the thing that did sort of stand out to me, thinking that the latter of those two things, and particularly thinking about like quality of life and how people kind of conceive of what they want to expect their days to hold, I guess, and kind of the ease with which we move through the world and the threats of, like, in Sydney, the housing crisis and the cost of living and all that. That's really sort of pushed on that sensitive spot or something. But also I have these moments where I think, oh, yeah, that feels like a bit of a threat maybe, and also how have most of people lived across time and across different parts of the world, to just be like, you know, life's not always straightforward or easy or free from hardship or threat. So I think it's hard to have perspective sometimes about like, oh, what's a real problem? What's a perceived problem? What's an imagined problem? And maybe if we're all feeling a bit vulnerable or worried, you know, your brain latches onto the negatives and the potentials, and that could even happen communally as well. Yeah,
it's such an interesting like emotion even to kind of diagnose fear, because we know like we know that lots of our fears are irrational fears, and we'll acknowledge some of those, like Laura's fear of cockroaches. You're kind of like,
they are disgusting. It's not irrational in that regard. You don't want to wake up with one on your face. That would be bad.
That would be bad. But in terms of kind of like phobias or things.
It's true. It's phobic for me.
I'm sure a lot of our listeners don't love cockroaches.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. I can't.
And
think
I respect
of something
them all.
More I can't think of something more trivial on the spot. But I think fear is like a real emotion for that's like occurs because of really bad things. Like, I don't think our aim in life should just be to be fearless or even like brave all the time, because I think, and we know from a Christian perspective, like there's a real like brokenness and wrongness with the world that I think actually legitimizes fear in a way of like, yeah, there are bad people out there. Maybe you do want a private security guard to kind of protect you from that. But I think also the kind of confidence that having a faith gives you is that God has like a control as well as a kind of loving care for his people. And so, yeah, in that there's many things I think that are legitimate fears, but we can have a confidence in God that he kind of knows and sees and loves us. In the Bible, heaps of times it says, do not fear as a command, but always with a gentleness of like, do not fear because I'm with you. That I think there's a real comfort in the way that God encourages us not to fear, but I still think fear is a legitimate thing that exists in our world.
Yeah, that is interesting that you say that, because I feel like sometimes in the Bible, like, there's this story where Jesus calms a storm, and the reaction to that is that all the disciples are really afraid, and Jesus is like, actually, it's kind of the opposite to faith, what they're showing there, that expression of fear. But then in the Old Testament, where we see this kind of picture of God as the creator and the rescuer and this kind of really big picture of him, he kind of commands, a good response to me is to fear me, given how other I am and how big I am, and like having that kind of awe-filled, fearful response of him is a good thing. So I wonder whether there are different ways we can process on fear that drive us to good faith, and ways that we can fear
that are not so good.
I love that story though, with Jesus and his friends in the boat, because I think a storm in a boat is a legitimate fear and especially when you have no control over it. But their question to Jesus is like, don't you care about us? Which I feel like is such, like, I feel like I've asked that question to God. So many people I know have been like, but don't you care? But I think Jesus, what's amazing about that story is because Jesus does have power over a storm and then stops the storm, which is like, I can't even really imagine even what that looked like. But I kind of think it's easy for Jesus to say, do not fear when your trust is in me, because I have power over things that you don't have power over. But I think there's something in that that kind of answers that insecure question that we have of like, but don't you care?
Well, I've heard people talk about, you know, when you are afraid, it's an indicator of a sort of protective desire about something precious, or, you know, like, what is it you fear? What's under threat, or what's in danger? And that interaction of Jesus with his friends and his followers, and they're like, don't you care about us? Like, our lives are on the line. That makes a lot of sense, and kind of like what heightens the emotions and raises the stakes in a situation of fear. And so, I mean, back to your like starting point, Al, about that rise in private securities for places to be like, oh, you know, there's obviously such a variety of things that could be included in there, which is protect my private property, because the thing that's really precious and valuable to me is something that I've built and established and poured a lot of kind of time and money into, or something like that. Or it might be for like the safety of kids in an environment. You'd be like, oh yeah, that's like a pretty precious thing to be caring about. And I think there is a question to ask ourselves, and we're afraid to be like, to try and reflect on what value is being shown there. And like you said, and there's just genuine like darkness and brokenness in the world. There are real threats to things that matter a lot and that are precious in God's sight. And then there are things that we hold to like really tight that maybe aren't the fullest substance of life. And so
like cockroaches, or no,
when the cockroach comes and it's gonna go onto my head in the night, then my life is at stake and God comes to help. Well, surely
you're what deep else? In prayer in those
deep
moments
in prayer. yeah anyway, yeah.
I was just trying to think of that. If someone stole something, what would it be that I'd be so worried about? It would, I think at this point, the podcast mics is my not most precious baby item in my house. Yeah, the baby would be a big, that would be a big, yeah, good point.
Podcast, close second. Yeah. Yes, well, we did our trusty computer pod computer has, looks like it is fading away a little bit. So
if anyone wants to sponsor a new laptop for the pod, we're all ears.
Unexpected appeal popping up in the middle of the episode.
Well, that feels like we're trivial enough now to go to our closing segment.
Guys, I've had this in my mind.
I'm so ready for this story.
You can't build up the expectations, because this is a story about my beautiful, amazing sister that she told me. And she called me on Saturday.
Is she okay to be named in this story?
Yeah, I checked with her. And she called me on Saturday. She called me by FaceTime. And I answered and she's like, for this story, we have to be on FaceTime. I was like, interesting. Okay, lay it on me. The night before, she'd gone to get her eyebrows waxed at the place where she normally goes. But the person who was doing the waxing, she had not had them to do that before. And they're chatting away and gets to a point where The person doing it is just pulling at the hair on her temple a little bit. And my sister's like, oh, there must be some wax in there. And she's like really pulling on it to try and get out. And she's just chatting away about life and blah, blah, blah. And after a while, it kind of stops. Anyway, the whole thing is sort of done and she pays and leaves and things like that. Anyway, she leaves and she goes. And I think she was like looking in the bathroom mirror or something and realized that a whole portion on the side of her temple, her hair had been cut. Cut really short, close to the
Why?
Because, yeah, like it became apparent that some wax had got in the hair and that was how the person doing the waxing dealt with it, but didn't say anything, did not ask her permission.
Oh, my gosh. Also, don't you normally have like a mirror at the end?
That I don't know. But as in like at first glance, I mean, the good thing is from what she showed me on the FaceTime, hence the need for the FaceTime for the demo. It didn't look, I mean, FaceTime, the quality is not always great. So I was just like, oh yeah, it didn't look terrible to me. Like once she pointed out and showed me, I was like, oh yeah, that's not how it's meant to look. Sort of like, I think you'd say it's sort of like a 3 to 4 centimeter by 1 centimeter strip, just like on the temple on one side.
Maybe she keeps going and just also, trendy.
How do you get wax out with like oil?
Yes, there are definitely other options. Anyway, it was, I mean, I think that is hilarious and horrifying. But my immediate response was like, oh my gosh, what did you do? You should have called them. I will call them now. I was just so ready to be like, unacceptable. And she was like, this is why I specifically did not call you last night. I called someone else. I did not want your up in arms reaction. She is not a confronter. And anyway, she handled it way more gently by texting like the runner of the spa or whatever, some photos of what happened. And
said, they, can I have
she,
my money
she
back?
Got free eyebrow waxes for life now?
Well, they were like, obviously extremely sorry. And that we'll refund you and we'll, you know, you don't have to pay next time and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, I was good. Like, absolutely, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, this is why I did not call you. She specifically named our other friends who she went to and was like, what should I do? She's
that's
like,
so can't offensive. Tell.
I know, but kind of true. Because I was like, oh, I will call them right
would
now
you
and
have
give
gone
them.
In if it was you?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'd be like, that is not cool.
What do you mean? So you walk out with half a shaved head and you walk back in and say, what?
To look at my half-shaved head. No, I would just be like, this is obviously, obviously unacceptable and I will not be paying for this.
Yeah.
No raised voices or anything like that, but a firm stance. Gracious. Anyway, the whole point of telling that story, apart from shout out to my lovely sister who handled it way more graciously than me, and what a great story. But it made me think about, are you the kind of person that when you paid for something and you don't get what you want, do you like say anything about it? It's like when people get like a haircut and it's happening and they don't like it, but they're worried about hurting the hairdresser's feelings, or you get brought the wrong meal at a restaurant. What do you do?
Yes, it's funny because I feel like if a friend tells me that, I'm very outraged on their behalf, or maybe I would speak up for someone else. But I think it probably depends how bad it is. I have had a haircut before where the woman got out like the electric shaver they use for the man's head because I asked her to thin my hair out because it's quite thick, and she just lifted up the back and shaved off the middle bit of my hair at the back, and she was like, there you go, nice and thin.
You but what and can Lindsay you do can at relate. That point?
And it was also hidden by
I would have said, that's unacceptable. I'm not paying for that.
So I think it feels like I feel
has it
stressed.
Grown back?
I don't know. I can't see it. I assume so.
We'll check after the pod.
Yeah,
let's
yeah.
Check through the
I think it's fine. But yeah, so I feel like when it's in the moment, I feel just like, get me out of here. This is so embarrassing. I've got to go.
Yeah, see, that's so interesting because I'm like, you obviously are not the one who should be embarrassed in that moment. Terrible lack of judgment by the hairdresser, but it does feel like that. Yeah. What about you, Anne?
I get my hair blonded, and so you have many experiences like this where you're like, oh, I'm not happy, bummer. And I have had mixed responses based on how much I've paid. Like if I know I've got a good deal, I'm like, I have contributed in some aspect. I can take some responsibility for this outcome. And then other times I've said, hey, the top doesn't really match the bottom. And then they've called the manager over and they say, totally does. And then I've backed down and paid for it.
Mm, and ganging up on you.
Yeah, that's mean. And then another time, it was the same situation, wasn't blended.
Different hairdresser.
And my mother-in-law recommended it. So I should have taken some responsibility as well. But it was like gray a bit at the top, but like yellowy blonde from below. And I was like, nah. And I went in and I was like, I can't handle it. And they were like, absolutely, we'll put a toner through it. But even when they put the toner through, then it was like darker than I wanted it to be. So I was kind of like, I can only be ungrateful once. I think that's kind of my... And not ungrateful. Oh, my gosh. So yeah. Apologetic. I can only be confrontational once. And then once I've said my part, I'm like, oh, okay. I'll accept what comes from here.
I think it makes me think there's like a whole other conversation we could have one time about people who feel hindered from expressing what they want and how that like manifests in all different life situations. But
totally. Well, cool. We're going to study a subject about conflict soon.
That's right. Anna and I will be experts. Lots more fights going to happen on the pod.
There is a famous story in my household of my sister wanting to buy a jumper and it was 50% off knitwear and they went up to pay and it wasn't 50% off. And the lady was like, oh, this item's not included. And my mum was like, what would you call this if not knitwear? And my sister was like, I don't need this jumper anymore.
Anyway, it does feel like the world divides sort of down a line of like people who are like, I don't want to be seen with you in a situation like this. You're going to embarrass me, which is what my sister thought about me. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, guys, thank you so much for listening to our really ridiculous but also profound conversation today. If you are not subscribing already, you totally should be, so that you know when episodes are dropping. We're in a really good rhythm at the moment, so get on it so you don't miss one. And if you have feedback or something or you want us to chat about something, send us an email at alookin.pod@gmail.com or you can go to the Insta, which is alookin.pod. You can find us on Instagram.
It's all happening there.
And often we will post on that just like, hey, give us ideas when we're thinking about recording and we discuss those ideas. Always good fun content in there. So would love your contributions and keep going. If you're a big contributor, we love that. Thank you. Special shout out to you know who that is. We're grateful. And we can't wait till next time. Bye.
Bye.